Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
You don't know Jack.
I used to love that game.
Adams voting. That is the sentence to start the show. You know, there was a game in the Stanley Cup final last night, but apparently everybody still wants to talk about how Lindy Ruff ended up second in the Jack Adams voting.
Well, I know.
Hi,
now
happy
why.
Friday.
Mm-hmm. And Elliot Friedman released the information on his pod today. He basically said that this is voted by the Broadcaster Association,
which we knew, but that
about 40 ballots were not returned. That is bull. And listen, and he also talked about like when the Professional Hockey Writer Association fills their ballot for the Hart and other trophies. If you don't return your ballot, you don't get to vote anymore. That's basically what they do. And I mean, if there's 40 broadcasters that did not return their ballot, I would say the same thing. You don't get to vote anymore, which maybe they don't care, which they say, thank you, because I don't want to vote. But, or maybe you just find another group to vote on it because they picked the wrong guy.
Yeah, in a weird way, this kind of validates, and I don't want to paint with too wide of a brush, but
you got the point there.
You kind of know how I feel about
the awards.
Hockey broadcasts.
Or the awards
and why
themselves.
I mute a lot of it, because I feel like there's laziness in the business, and this to me is an extension of that laziness. And if, and there's no reason to dispute it, so assuming this is true, this is extremely disappointing that this happens in the business.
It was like that too with the players for the Pearson Award, you know, and now the Ted Lindsay Award. Mm-hmm. Like, players would get their ballot in the room, they'd be like, I don't know. And they'd be like, not throwing them in the trash or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you would have like a Ted Lindsay Award winner, which is supposed to be the best player in the league. Be proud of saying, I get a vote on the best player in the league.
Yeah.
I get a vote on the best coach in the league. I got a vote on the MVP. I got a vote, like, you know, so to me, players used to do that a lot. Like, they'd go around, who did you vote for? I'm going to vote for the same person. Because they didn't care. Like, care. I have a little care.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, that's... Well, but also,
John Cooper
take
is still,
the awards for a grain of salt, because those are the things that happen sometimes.
Yeah. How do you sum up game two last night?
Well, you don't want to have a 2-0
lead. Can I tell
lead.
You something first?
Yeah.
I was crafting my 2004 narrative with 10 minutes to go. No shots.
Their shots were 14-11.
Do I have to do this again?
Yes.
Do we have to go back? And then.
How do you. And do we need a knockout?
No, I'm just not going to. I'll be over here in the corner now. I'm sorry. I even thought of it that way.
You had an under ticket. Like, you bet the under, 6.5 or whatever. You bet the under. You're laughing. It's 1. It's 2-0. It's 2-1. You're like, maybe 3-1 an empty net. It's 2-2. 5 minutes left. You're like, this is going to be a 3-2 overtime. I'm laughing. My ticket is going to cash. Mm-hmm. It ends up with 7 goals because it's a 4-3 overtime win. And now it looks good. The numbers look better. More shots late. Desperation late. I do feel that Carolina does that like they did it to Montreal throughout the whole second round. The low shot totals by the Canadians. So the way they play.
But it was surprising that their number was low.
That's what it was.
Correct.
But I do feel
But it's also not surprising because, you know, Vegas can limit. So
play well defensively, and that's the Tortorella way of playing the game. But I think Rod Brind'Amour had seen enough in the second period of that Aho, Svechnikov, and Jarvis line and said, He called him out after the first period, the first game. He said that our top guys need to be better, and they weren't better in game two. So he says, I'm breaking that lineup. So he put Martinook, a guy that has tons of energy and skates a ton, with Aho and Svechnikov, moves Jarvis with Stahl and Ehlers, two guys that had been going really good in game one and at the start of game two. So it took a little while. It took until the third period for Carolina to start shooting more.
Yeah.
And then, well, you know what? Then they come back in the game because they got pucks to the net and they crashed the net and the lines worked better.
Right. And no surprise, Stan Coven was a part of it as he, you know. And again, it's effort. It's not necessarily, you know, the precision. It's about effort. And Stan Coven's had it all through these playoffs and has critical goals. And ultimately, after Jankowski had it tied, you know, Carolina takes a lead, and yet they still weren't able to lock it down inside of the final 5 minutes after erasing the two-goal deficit inside of the final 10.
I'm happy that Vegas scored late in the game to make it 3-3 because I would have hated the game-winning goal to have been the challenge, the failed challenge by Vegas, and that turned into a power play goal, right? So now you can say, okay, the failed challenge would have probably made the game end 2-2. I don't know if that would have happened, but, you know, chances are it ends 2-2, you go to overtime. Mm-hmm. Now it ended 3-3, you go to overtime. So the failed challenge did not have a direct result in the game, and we can talk about that failed challenge.
You can do it real quick just to put a bow on it for
people. I think the NHL and the Situation Room absolutely fumbled the way this was presented. So you've got Barbashev that tries to wrap the puck around. Freddie Anderson makes the stop, scrambling, brings the puck into his body where at that point you can see the puck is covered. It's covered, and the referee is coming around the net wanting to blow the whistle. Barbashev pitchfork underneath Freddie Anderson, thinking the puck is loose. Great job by Barbashev, by the way, to say, I'm going to continue to play. Mm-hmm. I think at that moment, yes, that would be considered goalie interference because he's pitchforking the glove. The problem to me is that there was a whistle in the play. And the referee in that moment, when he's talking to Barbashev, he says, no, the goalie had the puck covered, no goal, whistle, no goal. So instead of going to the penalty bench and saying there's no goal on the play because of goalie interference, the Situation Room should have called down and said to the referee, was the intent to blow the whistle or did you blow the whistle there? Yes, I saw the puck covered, I intended to blow the whistle, or I blew the whistle. Okay, therefore, no goal for intent to blow the whistle or blowing the whistle. That's not a challengeable play. You take away the
like what happened in Game 7.
Wait, like what happened in Game 7 to Malenstein.
Yeah.
Like he couldn't score because there was a whistle.
Right.
So you
and it wasn't continuous. Like the puck wouldn't have continued without the jab.
Without the jab. Right. So like Malenstein, it wasn't continuous. He put it in. Mm-hmm. So you take away the controversy. Now you say it's goalie interference. So now you open the door to a challenge. Tortorella says, I'm challenging this.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bad challenge.
Yeah.
But it was a bad presentation of the NHL on the actual play. Mm-hmm. So they should have said, no goal. It's not challengeable. Drop the puck. Let's go. And now they avoid a mini controversy because they tied it and it got to overtime.
How about the Sabre line?
The Sabre line of Carrier
and Jankowski
and Robinson.
E-Rob. Yeah.
Yes.
It's unbelievable, right?
Like, amazing.
Holy cow. And you look at the contracts that these guys are on. Like, obviously, Will was the first one to go there on the six-year deal. But Jankowski's earned himself the extension. Robinson's earned himself long-term. Yeah. Like, it's phenomenal. I was so happy for Jankowski when he got that goal last night. Like, he's one of those guys that, you know, gets to the NHL, high draft pick, and it's hard,
yes.
Right? Like, it's always been a grind for him to stay at the highest level. So when players like him, and really good character person, when they have moments of success like this, and what a job by Carrier to stay on side.
And make
cow.
The play falling down.
Oh, my God.
To Jankowski.
Yeah,
great.
So, anyway, I was
but
thrilled
you know
for
what?
That.
So we just mentioned Malenstein. You mentioned Malenstein on the goal in Game 7. That wasn't counted. It was no goal.
Mm-hmm.
Those type of players that have speed, like Robinson can skate, Jankowski can skate, Curry can skate, they can hit,
Curry
they're forecheck.
Yeah.
Like, they look good, and they look like they have a role when a team is good and winning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are going to say, well, why didn't they keep Eric Robinson, and why didn't they keep Jankowski, why didn't they keep Curry, or whatever. The team didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're looking at how do we get better, and you're focusing on the top of your lineup. That's why, like, even though Beck Malenstein is an unrestricted free agent this summer,
yep.
He would be a priority for me to say, hey, we got to re-sign Malenstein in Buffalo because the team's good, and those type of players that bring speed and forecheck and whatnot are a big part of your team. So for me, Malenstein is exactly what Robinson, Jankowski, Carrier are doing. They get speed, they beautiful goals. Look at the goals Malenstein scored this year with the speed and the flip plays and all that. That's why those guys matter on the good teams.
Carrier is so hard to play against. Game one, I mean, it looked like a really innocent, typical forecheck, and like he just followed through into Shea Theodore so hard.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, holy cow. I don't know how you put yourself up. And it was one of those innocent type, you know, just And it's just, he's always been that, and a huge part.
But real quick, only had 5D, so you continue to forecheck, and that's like, that's so good.
Real quick with Jarvis in the winter, what did you see? Because obviously it's been a really challenging playoff for him from a goal scoring standpoint.
Very challenging, and I think the change of line helped him to get a little bit more confident. Great, great play by Shane Gostisbehere at the top of the zone. And he had the shot, right, that ended up making the power play goal, the 3-2 that was deflected. But if you're watching on MSG, Gostisbehere walks the line free. Freezes on a fake shot, and that same motion passes to Jarvis. So everybody from Vegas converged to the middle. They all wanted to block the Gostisbehere shot. Carter Hart actually stayed in the middle thinking their shot is coming. And when he tried to recover, that pass was too quick, was too good. He couldn't come over to the side. But the play by Gostisbehere, a great power play guy at the top of the zone. Yeah. And he freezes everybody, one motion, whoop, and there's a pass.
Yeah, and what did he say after game one? It was his fault, you know, on the game winner. And we talked about the highs and lows because he experienced
it. He took a breath.
Yeah.
And he let Hurdle get, and now Hurdle takes the penalty.
Oh, I know.
And that's the game winning goal.
There's been so much give, take from an individual standpoint already in this series, like roller coaster for these individual players in these team moments. And Gostisbehere, a huge part of it, and Jarvis obviously finishing it last night. So, you know, that was on the heels of Brett Howden scoring two more, and one of us in the studio said before the final, like, all it's going to take is a Marchessault type finish here, and Howden might well win the Conn Smythe.
I mean, obviously, I think that Vegas would have to win, because if they don't, then you're looking at, like, Stanko and Freddie Anderson and maybe Taylor Hall in there. But I would...
We should put Jeff Merrick in brackets on that Taylor
Jeff
Hall.
Jeff Merrick on... Yeah, I know. Hall of Fame. Taylor Hall of Fame right
Taylor,
there.
Taylor Hall of Fame.
I would...
Love you,
I would be inclined if I was like, you know, have $10 at home to say, I'm putting on Brett Howden at plus 1,000 right now. Like that, you know, that's just $10, whatever. $5. You make 50 or $100. Mm-hmm. I think he would be my leader in the clubhouse right now for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Interesting. 13 goals, but Marner keeps picking up multi-point games, so it's going to be hard to overlook him, obviously, based on his move to Vegas.
Plus
and the impact
big block
that he's
in game
had.
One.
how about, man, you can never script every day in this world.
Oh, yeah.
Who would have thought yesterday morning we would be talking about a Dylan Larkin trade request?
Jeez.
Like... Man,
I was thinking we were going to start the show with that, but the game is the game.
The game is the game, and do you want the smart aleck lead-in on Larkin?
Go ahead. What do you got? Face-offs only matter when they matter?
He's really good on face-offs. He's so good on face-offs, he hasn't been in the playoffs in the last 10 years, and it's not all his fault, obviously. Look, Dylan Larkin has been a lifetime Red Wing. He's their leader.
Michigan.
He's a 30-goal scorer annually. Six times he's crested over 30 goals. Who is the best fit, and are the Sabres, should the Sabres be in the discussion here if Dylan Larkin, in fact, wants out?
Yes, I would. Number one, I would say Tage Thompson, get on the phone, call your USA Olympic gold medal buddy, your line mate, and let's work on that. Owen Power, get on the phone. Michigan, you guys have that connection. Let's go. You know, Michigan's not far from here. It's a quick, easy drive if you have some friends and family. And
you also think Albany's a close drive, too.
Albany is a close drive. It's only 4 hours. You do that in your sleep, Duffer. You don't even have to stop for gas. It's one, like, you go, like, it's good.
Who wants to stop for gas anymore?
But here's the thing. We've been talking Robert Thomas. There's other centers that may be available. And do the Sabres need a top six forward, a centerman, probably? I would say yes. And you know, we saw Tage move to the wing in game six, game seven of the Montreal series. But look, Larkin now moves to the top of the list. Like, Robert Thomas, take a second place silver medal right now. I'm putting Larkin ahead of Thomas on my list.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
I think Larkin has more speed. Larkin plays many different roles. He can play penalty kill. He can play power play. I think Larkin is, to me, a better all-around player than Thomas. I'm not sure about... There's a few things with Robert Thomas that I think I
want to
trust.
Well, he's one of the game's elite playmakers.
He is a good, but I think Larkin is a level above. So I'm putting Larkin ahead, which maybe facilitates a, Robert Thomas move, because now everybody's focusing on Larkin and willing to maybe pay big bucks on Larkin to get him to their team, that St. Louis has to take a little less to make the move with Thomas. Maybe they wait to see where Larkin goes so they see what teams may be desperate. Mm-hmm. It's going to change the landscape of the Robert Thomas situation in St. Louis with Larkin now requesting a trade.
Larkin and Thomas are separated in age by 3 years.
Yeah.
I think they're, you know, you look at one little like point share, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like the war kind of equivalent that Hockey yeah. Reference uses. They're pretty similar,
yeah.
You know, through the course of their career. And that's not unusual. I mean, anytime you have, it's funny how often it all lines up, right? Like if a player makes about this much money and gets about this many points a year, like they're all real, real, real close. And every team in their hockey department is going to analyze it a different way. And obviously it comes down to needs. And oh, by the way, Josh Norris is a Michigander as well. Like,
oh, yeah,
so if you're
right.
getting, you know what I mean? Like if you're getting into, okay, let's make a big deal and salary in, salary out and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. It gets more fascinating the more you talk about it.
It gets more fascinating. I think the Sabres have a lot of center depth. Here's the one difference, and I want to make sure, because you know I'm good with lefty-righty. Robert Thomas is a right-handed shot. Dylan Larkin's a left shot. If you want to say Larkin playing with Thompson, you move Thompson to the right, and all of a sudden Larkin lefty, Thompson righty, they got that ping pong mm-hmm. puck going up the ice, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to Thomas would be a righty, and then maybe you're playing with Thompson, and then you got to go backhand.
Well, maybe that would help Tage on the power play.
With the backhand?
No, if Thomas is...
Oh, yeah. Giving him the puck.
Feeding it over there.
Feeding
too.
It
yeah,
over
yeah.
there. But I'm just saying, like, I like a lefty in the middle.
I know.
With Thompson. Norris was, you know, a lefty with Thompson, and it looked to work better that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, more awards. Are you ready?
What I was going to tell you? The last little bit of the Iser plan in Detroit. So some suggested, a buddy of mine suggested that Larkin will only stay in the U.S. because there was like Canadians talk and Toronto talk or whatever. Uh-huh. And I said, he'll send them to Florida, the Panthers, for a 7th-round pick. That's the final chapter of the Iser plan.
He's going to go to California.
You think? L.A.?
Don't they all end up there?
Maybe. With Kopitar retiring.
Producer Sam.
Yeah,
they're
no,
all,
they
like,
all.
Honestly.
But
like,
with Kopitar but, retiring, but, they lost Dano. They got
okay,
Panarin.
There's one.
That's L.A.
Obviously, San Jose needs it to help Celebrini.
Yeah.
And obviously, Anaheim with McTavish and everything that swirls around that.
Trade
like,
McTavish to Detroit.
Right?
And then,
as a very minor part, even though contractually they're similar, but McTavish hasn't shown anything near, obviously, what Larkin has done for his whole... Anyway, it's... fascinating. Wow. And all of this still almost, well, we're 3 weeks today from the draft here in Buffalo as the yeah. combine continues and the draft, yes. of course, on the 26th and
okay.
the 27th. All right, quickly.
More awards.
Ryan McLeod did not win the Selke. He got a first
place
vote.
He got one vote. No, two votes.
He
got
a first place vote among his two votes, and he still finished 27th. Congratulations
like,
to the Canadiens.
Like, I get it.
Who win both the Selke and the Lady Bing. And by the way, you were wrong. You were wrong. You were wrong. Andrei Kopitar did not sail off into the sunset with another Lady Bing.
Yeah, no,
or a Selke
he did not.
For that matter. But it was more likely, you thought, he'll get the Bing again. And,
I thought for sure he was going to get the Lady Bing. It went to Cole Caulfield. Okay, good. Like, the guy is, a good player, doesn't take a lot of penalties, seems to be a good guy on the ice, and all of that. That's fine. Listen, Nick Suzuki, from the start, I felt that he was going to run away with the Selke Trophy. He mm-hmm. did 151 first-place vote. Anthony Cirelli at 10 first-place vote.
Wow.
Brock Nelson at 4. Mitch Marner at 3. You got Stahl at 7, Pinto at 8, or whatever. And then you go down the list, and Ryan McLeod at one of them. So out of the 200 or 190 voters or whatever.
Who's to say how many people voted?
Well, yes, because there's a lot of voters. But Ryan McLeod got a first-place vote.
He did.
Congratulations. Crack yourself a beer.
Remember years ago when Jeff Skinner got a Lady Bing?
Yes.
Like, he was, like 70th on the list, but somehow had one?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, Alex Tuck was 14th. He
right.
got 0 first-place vote, but he has 3 second, 3 third, 10 fourth, and 9 fifth.
Yeah, continuing his annual acknowledgement in this regard as, let's just round it off to, like, a top 20 on an annual basis. He seems to fall into
yes.
that. All right. Shayna Goldman is coming up, but not before D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
All right, you had fun last night with producer Sam?
There's this new thing online. It's called 84-0. You can play it. So basically, you try to have a perfect season by picking a left winger, a center, a right winger, two defensemen, and a goalie, and then simulate the year. But the trick is that the Spiels win, and they give you a team and an era, the 50s Canadians.
The Spiels win? Are you trying to say the wheels spin?
The wheels spin. Yeah, okay. That's a, I don't know what you call that. But it's a,
I'm so out of the loop on this, yes. I didn't even know whether that was a real thing. So
you basically press the button, and then it's going to say, pick a player on the 60s Montreal Canadiens. It gives you a list of players.
Ah.
So you say, okay, I want Jean Béliveau. Okay, perfect, good. So it fills in the roster spot that he's in. And then you keep going. Now, you may end up on your last pick, and you don't have a lot of good choices. You can skip one time. But it's a fun game trying to go 84-0. My best so far, 83-1. So I just did it right before the show, 83-1. I've not gone 84-0. Producer Sam got it done last night, 84-0 for Producer Sam.
Dazzled as I was muting everything else of importance last night. I was listening to music as it rolled into New Music Friday. So I was up late, and if I'm delirious today, no apologies, because it's worth listening to this single, Due Today, from Red Clay Strays and their album Grateful, which is out now. You know, it was only a week ago we were sitting here shocked at the passing of Claude Lemieux, yeah. Right? And I just want to acknowledge the messaging that is in music consistently and how people connect and relate to it. And the song ends by saying, because the sun's calling your name and the stars would love to see you dance again. There's so much more life. There's so much life to live, and there's plenty of words and songs still left to give. So yeah. On that note, embrace the new music. It's a lengthy, terrific list today. Shayna Goldman next on Sabres Live.
Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Attention, attention,
attention.
Attention, Sabres fans. Lock in your seats for the 26-27 season with a Sabres 10-game plan. You can enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus 9 more games. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is with us here as usual on Friday.
Shayna, I'm playing 84-0. Have you played that game yet?
I haven't. I saw it everywhere yesterday, and I was like, I don't need another distraction.
I just
You and I are on the same page.
I just went 78-6 with Jean Béliveau, Alex Ovechkin, Maurice Richard, Paul Coffey, Victor Hedman, and Olaf Kolzig. My best is 83-1. Producer Sam did 84-0 last night, but it takes literally 30 seconds. But you're right. The problem is you're going to do 50 games,
yep.
And a half an hour later, you said, what have I accomplished yet? But you got to give it a try. You got to do it.
I know. I really should. I know that's something. I'm going to fall deep into a rabbit hole. Like, goodbye, TikTok. That's going to be my new vice. And I'm like, I'm pushing it off till it's inevitable.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll, I'll pull it up. We'll do one at the very end in the interview to close it out and see what we can do. I'll get your picks on it.
Okay,
game last night. Challenge, no challenge, bad challenge. What are they thinking? It was sleepy until the end. It was great now. What did you make of that game?
Terrible till the 50-minute mark. And that is not just me saying it because Vegas went up 2-0, right? Like, the quality of the game wasn't there. I don't care about the score. I want a good series. Did I want the Canes to tie it so we're guaranteed a longer series? Sure. But because I honestly think if Vegas were to have taken that 2-0 series lead back home, like, Carolina's cooked. But it wasn't an interesting game like it was in game one until it was, and then it was, like, fantastic. The challenge is an interesting one because I think there's two ways to look at it. In a vacuum, would I have challenged that? No, I'm not challenging in that moment. I think the broadcast made it even more convoluted with the intent to blow conversation, and then does Dorofeev get it in with his glove? It's not even talked about on the broadcast till after the fact. But in that exact situation, right, Vegas has a great penalty kill. Fantastic penalty kill. Some might say that should win the Conn Smythe. Then you have Carolina. Terrible power play, scoring, I think, 4.3 goals per 60 so far this postseason. One of the worst teams so far on the advantage. Then you take Tortorella's philosophy into account, and he has said it from day one with these challenges that goalie interference is like a box of chocolates and you don't know what you're going to get. So you put that all together and it's like this perfect storm for Vegas to challenge in that instance because they can risk it. Mm. Doesn't work out in their favor, obviously, but luckily isn't what decides the game at the end of the day. And I think that's the most important part of it.
Well, it could be a decider to the game because Carolina scored on the power play, which they never do, as you pointed out. Yep. And then they get the game-winning goal on the power play, probably building from the confidence they got because of the failed challenge. So it may have affected in a weird way, but I agree with you. Like, I think they ended up making the right call. I think that was a dumb challenge. Torts said after the game, I challenged this 10 times out of 10. I'm saying, Torts, you would lose this 10 times out of 10, but whatever. You know, a little bit like the Colorado series. If Vegas goes up to nothing, maybe that's a sweep, and we don't want that. We want more hockey, so that was good. What'd you think of Jarvis and Martinook changing spot for Carolina in their lines?
I think it's a good thing to change the lines. I think it's a good thing to do it in a game that turned out to be a win, because I think if you do it after going down 2-0, then it's a little bit more of a desperation ploy, and they need some sort of swap round on that line. I don't know if that's the swap I would have made, to be honest. I've been asked about this already, like, numerous times, and I'm going to, like, dig my feet in. This is the hill I'll die on. I think it should be Svechnikov switching with Martinook, actually. Mm-hmm. And you get a puck retriever to play with Jarvis and Aho, and just someone who can help turn their rushes into more sustained pressure, because that's the issue. They're looking for the perfect shot a little bit too often, and, you know, it's these one-and-dones. Yeah. I think Martinook can help you, because you're not going for the perfect shot if you have Martinook. He can create chaos in front of the net, right? They have enough speed and the legs, I think, to make up for him. And then I think you keep Ehlers and Staal together. They've been a perfect combination, honestly. Throw Svechnikov there, who has experience playing with Staal and was on that third line before, and you add another playmaker to the mix, and I think that could be a good thing.
Okay. Should everyone feel oddly validated when a coach like Tortorella says he would challenge it 10 out of 10 times and wow. Everyone assumes they would be wrong? And
I love Torts, but he was being the Torts after the game yesterday.
Yep.
Okay.
Like, with his comments and it, like.
But even if it's an exaggeration.
Yes.
We've talked, you know, and struggled at times with inconsistency, even though we sit here very confidently most days. And somewhat ironically, a finalist for the Coach of the Year this year, Dan Muse. Oh, my God. Like, they were terrible on challenges this year.
That,
like,
should be a criteria.
Maybe that cost him Coach of the Year. The number of times watching the Penguins and seeing the look of, like, what is going on? Like, Dan Muse was incredulous most times with the call. I'm like, dude, I think you and your staff might need to hone in on the rules or why. But anyway, who's to say, as you like to say, Shayna, because I really, really think, and this is not even blaming, this is just fallout from trying so hard to get every single thing right that it leaves the waters a little bit muddy. And it's hard. It is hard to be 100% consistent so everybody can be on the same page.
You can't be consistent in this sport. You know what I mean? Like, none of us have
any sports,
the cup
really.
Correct. That's my point. You look at all of this, yes.
Like, baseball replays.
Pass interference in football.
Pass interference, whatever. Yeah. Like, in any sports, it's hard to be consistent.
Yeah, and now we're talking about a sport where it's a bunch of people skating around with knives on their boots, shooting rubber at 100-plus miles per hour. There's divots in the ice. Who knows what's going to happen in any given moment? So, of course, there's going to be a lot of variety. It makes everything more difficult. But we do know with challenges, right, like, it better be good if you're challenging it for goalie interference, because it's inconsistent in the regular season. It is even more inconsistent in the postseason. They don't want it to be anything that's these, you know, tiny little detail. It should be egregious, and I understand that. I still think the process is right. The application is constantly wrong, and you don't know. So, yeah, 10 out of times you're challenging that, sure, but 10 out of 10 times you're probably getting a different result. Who knows, honestly? And if that's what he was trying to say by it, like, you challenge it because you don't know, it's like, all right, go off. But I think that's just a Tortsian, let me take the attention and take the pressure off my team so they can stew and then get back to business.
Yeah, well, they tied it up and lost in OT on a tripping by Hurdle. Hurdle was the hero in game one, and Gosses Bear was the zero. It flips around a little bit. Okay, we talked about Dylan Larkin requesting a trade out of Detroit. Before the break, We mentioned the California teams, LA, San Jose, Anaheim, potential suitors for a Larkin, you know, come down the middle with those three teams where they're at. I got a text from a buddy today. He said Minnesota, Columbus, New Jersey, Nashville. So obviously there's the West Coast. There's a little central. There's a little east. Where do you think Dylan Larkin ends up? And what is a return you can potentially see in a Larkin trade?
The return all depends on how many teams he lets Detroit negotiate with, right? Because he has a no trade clause. And it's a little bit different from, say, Brad Marchand's a UFA, a pending UFA. He's rental at the deadline. You're either getting something for him on deadline day or you are getting nothing, period. He leaves as a free agent. I guess he's a bad example because he wanted to stay. But you know what I mean? Like, the context of this situation is different. He could say, I only want to go to Team X. And Detroit could say, that doesn't interest me. No. And you wait. And it's a cold war. And you just wait for it to settle. And that's okay. So the return's really going to depend on how many teams actually are allowed to get involved. Because if he chooses a team like the Wild, that makes all the sense in the world, from the USA Hockey connections to the fact that they're a true contender to the fact that they desperately need help down the middle. They're not going to have as much to offer as, say, Nashville might, right? So now all of a sudden your options change. I think three key factors we're going to have to like consider, and it's going to be which teams are near or in the playoff picture, because he's obviously doing this to be on a team that competes in the playoffs, and that's understandable at this point. And when you see the Eastern Conference rising around him, I'm sure like the Sabres, Senators, and the Canadians all going into the playoffs, even the Flyers, and on deeper runs than expected, you know, that's got to hurt. The other part of it is a manager who's willing to take big swings. Because the Red Wings, year after year, go into March, fall apart, and management has done nothing. This year was the first year you get a goalie in the offseason, you get a defenseman at the deadline, right, wrong, or sideways. It's buying, and that's what they need to see. So a GM that actually is willing to invest is going to be key. And then I'm sure we're all going to talk about the USA hockey elements of it and where he has teammates and might want to be. So with all of that in mind, Minnesota's the number one option for me. But it depends on the return. Two other teams that stand out would be Utah. They could use some help down the middle, and they have all of that incredible skill, incredible speed, but they could use a center like him, that all situation threat. He would be such a perfect fit, whether he goes with the young guns or he jumps up and plays with Clayton Keller, USA connection there too. Other one that I would consider is New Jersey, and it all depends on the Nico Hischier situation. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's going to happen there, but since his name has been out there all of a sudden, and just that they are going to talk negotiations, he would be, if for whatever reason they decide to move on from Hischier, which I think is a mistake, I would say Larkin could make too much sense there.
Okay, so we, as you mentioned, we know that because he has a no-movement clause, he'll dictate a little bit where he wants to go, and maybe the return will be a little skewed because of that. Now, let's say it's Minnesota. Okay, Minnesota probably throws in a 2027 first rounder because
they literally just gave almost the entirety of their system to Vancouver.
Yes, but let's just say it's Minnesota, right? So first rounder, not this year because they don't have one. So it would have to be next year, 2027. You're probably looking at, okay, we'll trade you Gustafson or Wallstedt, right? Like one of the goalies, because they, Minnesota probably. But then do you have to throw Daniil Yurov? Do you have to throw like another player, or you're looking at like that's enough because it's a no movement clause situation?
Yeah, like if they get multiple picks, right, you can use those. You can absolutely use those to flip for more players. If you were to trade Vegas two first round picks tomorrow for their players, they're flipping them. Look what Carolina did. The picks they get back for Rantanen, one of them brings in Keandre Miller, so they walk out of that deal with Hall, Stankoven, Keandre Miller, and the space to sign Ehlers, and you see the domino effect. And I think Detroit does have to think that way a little bit here if their options are limited, and say Minnesota doesn't have the perfect pool of players to pick from, and Yurov is a really good one. I think the goalies, though, it's like another, you know, crimp in this situation, because if I'm Minnesota, I'm absolutely not moving on from Wallstedt, in that I think he was the better goalie last year, and you have the hip surgery for Gustafson. So that's an even more of a wild card.
And I don't know, movement clause for Gustafson as well.
Exactly. And it does feel like, this is me from the outside saying this, just some of the comments from the playoffs, like he wants to play, wants to be a starter. And if they say to him, guess what, you're not that anymore here, maybe he'd be a little bit more willing to waive. But I don't know if that's like the perfect move for Detroit. But if Detroit can think big, even if they don't get the return, and get active, because it should be an active summer on the trade front, right? Like, there are no options in free agency. You have to be smart on the trade front, try to be bold with offer sheets, which no one's going to do, but you can pretend.
I wouldn't be so sure on that.
I feel like every year we say it and it doesn't happen, and then we see two workouts so well for the Blues and no one follows up.
Right, but the fact that that Blues-Oilers thing is still fresh enough and we have entered into a new world with all this cap space, I would bet on it that we will see something this year. But to your point, and I loved how you phrased it, Shayna, with the, like, you know, a Cold War setting in here, because, you know, if, like, Larkin is really, really, really adamant about dictating where he goes, the flip to that is, and it ties in with the timing of this now, 3 weeks ahead of the draft. Like, to me, if this is coming from the Larkin camp, it's because they see an urgency to get this out of the way. Whoever's trading is involving draft picks, and we're going to go into the summer with our new place, and we're going to have months to get acclimated and all the rest of it. Like, so don't you now see this 3 week sprint for teams to get after this? And by the way,
and it's all going to happen here in Buffalo.
All going to happen here in Buffalo. And again, for the third straight day, I'm going to say Danny Briere sat in the studio the other day, and I wouldn't rule out the Flyers being involved in this as well, among everybody else who should be involved in this.
Yep.
There are very few perennial 30-goal scorers that hit the market in this way at this time.
Shayna, we want you to use it in one of your articles. Danny Briere was quoted on this show. He can say, quoted on Sabres Life, there is always players to go get. There's always available players. Mm-hmm. It's not like, free agency is not great this year. Doesn't matter. There's always players. You just got to do the work. So you can quote him.
He had that look in his eye, just like he always had that look in his eye before he would crush your dreams in the playoffs. You know, he was just so clutch. And I fully believing that Briere and the Flyers are going to be noisy this summer. So
they should be. I mean, right? Like, he's right. If you're a good general manager and you want to do your job, there's always good players. Someone needs to send that to, like, Stan Bowman and, like, get it cross-stitched on a pillow. There are always good players out there. There's always deals to be made.
You know what? That should be your next project. Like, have, you know, teams that go get a good player.
Shayna.
Make, like, a revamped jacket and says, good players always available.
Oh,
like
Shayna, it's pillow talk.
There you go, right up the
it's,
arm.
It's pillow talk, and you're going to crochet a message for each team, and 32 of these pillowcases are going to be available for sale. I love this.
We're gonna thrift the yarn. We're going to do it all.
Yeah.
That's great. Quickly, because we always love, and I love, a good tennis update, a women's final that is going to be without Pegula or Sabalenka and all the top, really, women's player. And Sabalenka saying she wants to quit tennis now, but they talked to me in a week. So what'd you make of the women's side of the bracket at Roland Garros?
Oh, my God, it's been wild. It's been so exciting. Sabalenka, I think, will be fine. A little bit of big loser energy. I understand it. But it's so exciting that it's like a new winner is being crowned on either side of this. Like, it's a new era a little bit to see all of the big guns one by one get knocked out.
Yep.
And it feels like a unique year. Like, I'm just excited about it. I'm excited about both sides of this matchup. I have no idea who's going to win. I love that even more.
I like Andreeva. I think she wins.
She is so good. She had a little bit of a temper, but I kind of respect it. And then on the other side of it, I cannot remember how to pronounce her name, but I heard it yesterday, and it's like I had it in my head, and then it's gone. Yeah, she's so crafty, so crafty out there that I'm like, I just hope we get a good three-setter. Like, I just want to be entertained.
Will Serena win another major?
I could see her winning another major in doubles.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if she's doing it in singles, but listen, if she can make it to, like, the quarters, round of 16 in a grand slam, then I think it's all worth it.
Mm-hmm. You're going to get your tickets for the U.S. Open to go see Serena play with maybe Mboko, a good old Canadian, and then get it going. Do you know why they call the French Open Roland Garros?
No.
I learned that yesterday. I thought that was a famous tennis player or whatnot. No, he was a rugby player, and he also developed one of the very first fighter jet plane in France or whatnot, and then he was killed in action. But the Rugby Association donated the grounds to the Tennis Association, but they said only if you name the grounds Roland Garros, and that's why it's named like that for a rugby player.
I had no idea, actually. It's like the one slam. Everything's secretive there.
Yeah, very secret.
Well, secretive and non-technological.
While I was doing my 84.0, I was also
Well, you now have to teach us because we're, you know, I may end up at HR after this because I may not be on board with this activity. But teach us how to go here.
So I just did it on my phone. So we'll do it. Oh, you want to do it on your computer?
I don't have a choice.
So go drop the puck. Go 84.0.
You got to do this simultaneously, Shayna. Here, so, this is live action event.
The Flyers of the '90s. We have to have a left winger, right winger, center. D, and goalie.
Now, so, was this listening to my talk about Danny Briere? Is that why I got stuck with the Flyers?
Maybe.
Here?
So this the Flyers ridiculous. Of the 90s, who do you pick between Lindros, LeClaire, Recchi, Eric Desjardins, like the top players, right? So who did you pick?
Recchi.
No, that would have been Eric Lindros. You're trying to go 84.
You got to go Lindros there.
But Recchi's a Hall of Famer, too. Give
him
some
got
credit.
Outran.
No, you're going outbid right there. Lindros.
The LA Kings of 2010s, Ipek Kopitar. The Canadians of 2000, Duffer, he's never going to win. He picked Andre Markov.
Andre Markov really good.
And
we're
then
going
Panarin,
64 in this one.
You are not going to get 70 wins, Duffer. That's how he ends up with, let's see, 70 wins. What did I say?
There you go. 70, 10, and 4. I'll take that every day of the week. What did you end up with, Shayna?
Well, she didn't do it.
I didn't do it yet. I have to do it. I just pulled it up, though.
Okay. Like, 83-1 is the...
Make sure you hit at Sabres Live when you get your result.
Exactly. Producer Sam went perfect, and I think that you got to quit after you go perfect. You can't play it anymore.
What was your musical?
Ask Hurdle. You got to quit perfect, or you never know what's going to happen the next game.
That's right.
Speaking of perfect, what's your new music selection today on Friday?
Oh, the deluxe version for the Beaches. I've been so excited about that. That, and I saw the Aces and Debbie Dawson have new songs, and I'm like, 1, 2, 3, that's what I'm listening to.
Perfect 10, right? The Beaches?
Absolutely.
There you go. Ties in with your perfect 84-0.
84-0. I'm going to play it all day. And once it happens, tweet the results. Boom, it goes at Sabres Live.
Happy weekend, Shayna. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We're wrapping up Sabres Live after this.
Back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Which way is it going to go from here? At Sabres Live, the poll question of the day. With the series tied 1-1, heading to Vegas, who is your pick to win the Cup? Vegas in 5 or 6, Vegas in 7, Canes in 5 or 6, or Carolina in 7?
Originally, I said Vegas in 6, so I got to stick with Vegas in 6. But
this is so even.
People think that it ends probably in 6. Like, there's only 42% of people that think it's going 7.
That's a lot, dude.
60% think it's 5 or 6.
Yeah, but 42% is a lot in any poll, no matter how you slice it.
Well, there was 40% of people that didn't vote for the Jack Adams. So, yes, there you go. Hey, by the way, Shayna went 82-2 in her attempt at the 84-0.
Yeah.
And some wonder if your team of 70 wins gave her the 2 losses.
All I know. is I'm proud of my effort. Much like I was proud of Cale Clegg just a year ago with the Rochester Americans. Happy birthday, Cale. He's 28 today. You remember last postseason? He started the playoffs with goals in 5 straight games for the Amerks with, you know, from his blue line position. So he played in Manitoba this year, and here's hoping. Kills having a great day.
Yeah, Cam Atkinson also has a birthday today. Marty Gelina has a birthday today. Ooh, for those who remember clutch. Marty Gelina, Calgary Flames in 04 final, thought he had the overtime goal against Nikolai Habibulin, but Parallax View determined the puck was not over the line. Tampa wins and wins game 7. And Mike Fisher, Mr. Kerry Underwood, mm-hmm. with his 46th birthday. He's a young man. Fisher is a young guy.
Same age as you?
No, he's 3 years younger. Really? He'll be 49 in August, Duffer.
Similar eyes, though.
Maybe.
Like, you know.
If I grew
really
the hair in a little curl, maybe I could pass for
Great
Mike Fisher. Great hair.
Yeah.
Great hair. Good player.
Very good player.
And my buddy J.P. Dumont sees him quite often in Nashville, because that's where they reside, obviously.
Steven Wilson Jr. crushing it these days in Nashville as part of the CMAs. He's got new music out today. That's why I'm wearing the hoodie. Enjoy the weekend, folks. We will see you again on Monday.